All units proceed to your post assignments.
Go, go, go!
And it's the lightning round of Ask the Inspector. This is the penultimate episode of Ask the Inspector prior to Scott's departure for Russia, coming up in a matter of days. The lightning round we do every Tuesday for 1 hour. Scott answers all questions in 3 minutes or less. As usual, Scott is extremely busy, having just published 2 articles, for example, that one in Consortium News, and a very provocative one in our Substack, Fuck You, Elon. I don't know how to say the asterisks out loud, so I hope you don't mind me saying the word I believe it's supposed to represent. You're fed up with Elon, huh?
Yeah, look, he's a joke. He's a joke. Twitter's a joke. It's... You know, and he's a hypocrite. And I'm tired of waiting for Elon Musk to do the right thing. He's not going to do the right thing. He's incapable of doing the right thing. He doesn't even know what the right thing is. He's confused about what free speech means. He clearly doesn't know what a free speech absolutist means. And so, yeah, it's just, yeah.
And he hasn't even told you, or he or anybody from Twitter, hasn't even specified your alleged violation this time. Is that correct?
No, there's no tweet. They haven't said this tweet. They said you have violated Twitter rules. And
without saying what rule was violated
or what the violation is.
That is like the sickest version of censorship just about.
Yeah, but how do you appeal? That's the thing. Yeah. How do you appeal this? You know?
Yeah.
And that's the point. And then, you know, I'm not going to give away confidences, but I was in conversation with people who, you know, I have reason to believe that when they say they have the inside scoop about what was happening, that was indeed what was happening. And, I thought I was NAFO swarmed. I mean, that's what the running narrative was, that NAFO had swarmed and tricked the algorithm into, but that should have, you know, at a minimum got my account back when I appealed. Here, though, that's not the case. What I was told is that Elon Musk hates Alex Jones and won't allow Alex Jones back onto Twitter. So much for free speech. And the reason why is that Alex Jones, look, there's controversy here, the Sandy Hook thing, he was out there attacking the parents and accusing it of being a scam, of them overplaying, etc. There was a defamation lawsuit, which when I look at it, seems to have taken a shortcut to get the defamation, skipping a very important constitutional due process aspect. But that's the court business. That's between Alex and the court. The point is, Alex apologized about this. He said, I was wrong. How many people do you know out there who are that big of who say, I was wrong, I apologize? He did it. I have yet to hear apologies from people like Antony Blinken for apologizing to the people of Japan for failing to acknowledge that it was the United States that dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki that he sought to exploit to make a political point, et cetera. So, you know, and apparently my going on Alex Jones.
It shouldn't be Elon Musk's role to punish Alex Jones anyway. I mean, what does he have to do?
No, not if he's a free speech absolutist.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Elon said...
And you, by extension, you went on the Alex Jones show and just did an interview?
About nuclear disarmament. It's not like I went on the Alex Jones show and said, Sandy Hook's a fraud. No, no, no. You know, it's still that's free speech, but, I could understand people get... I went on to talk about nuclear disarmament and trying to have a campaign to save the world. I'm avoiding the word, you Elon. I held my dying. I don't mean to minimize that, except to point out that his wife says bullshit. You weren't holding the kid. I was. It doesn't matter. The kid died. Sudden infant death syndrome, tragedy. I'm not here to make light of it. And I'm also very sympathetic to how emotional that is to people. I cut people all sorts of slack when you get into, you know, grieving and things like, especially about a child. So I'm not mad at Elon about that. But I did point out the hypocrisy of a guy claiming to care so much about children, and yet you sent $100 million to the Ukrainian government, Petro Poroshenko, saying that I will make the Ukrainian the children of the Donbass cower in a basement, and then sent artillery shells that killed 130 of them, and you care about children, you lying sack of hypocritical shit. And then he turns around and he sends up Starlink, and they know what Starlink's being used for. They know that it's being used to target, and they know that they're sending HIMARS using Starlink at civilian infrastructure in the Donbass, killing more children. So, hey, Elon Musk, fuck you and your children. Fuck you, Elon. Don't pretend to care about something when you don't. Because if you care about kids, you wouldn't be doing what you're doing, pal. You're killing kids. You, Elon. If there could be a legal case put forward, you would be complicit in it because you have provided the mechanisms that facilitate the death of children. You know it. You continue to do it. And you banned me from Twitter because I had the gall to come out and say, gosh, I want to get rid of nuclear weapons. So, yeah, fuck you, Elon.
Well, so much for the asterisks. It's not as if we have
broke my will, Jeff. You broke my will.
It's not as if we have an overabundance of experts speaking out for nuclear disarmament. So, I mean, should be the most important thing. This is Daniel Ellsberg week. Many of us who have been inspired by him and who admire him greatly are participating in one way or another. He's dying of pancreatic cancer. And this week, rather tonight, what is it? Today, sorry, where I am, it's today. And also Friday night, we'll be paying tribute to him. Yep. And DanielEllsbergWeek.org. There's a website set up specifically for this.
Yeah, the Veterans of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPS, that I'm a member of, gave him the Sam Adams Award, which is their annual award for, for speaking truth to power, et cetera. So they accelerated the process. It was approved and it's been given to him. So, while he is still able to understand and recognize the recognition that he's been given, that's been done. And I think this week is also timed to take advantage of the fact that, despite his declining health, he's still cognizant of what's happening. So my understanding is that he is following everybody who's participating, and he's deeply appreciative of it.
Well, that's great to hear. That's the way to pay tribute to somebody while they're still alive.
While they're still alive. Damn right.
Absolutely. And I don't know if the word is ironic or not, but it's something about your trip to Russia seems awfully significant. You're one of the most important, if not the most important, Daniel Ellsberg disciple. And at this time, you are on the eve of that trip. And he's been talking about the threat of nuclear weapons for many years.
Yeah, and I mean, some people are asking me, why are you doing this? You're going to just, put the lightning rod back up, the government's going to come after you and all that stuff, and the definition of insanity is somebody doing the same thing twice and expecting a different result. And of course, as Jeff, we burned ourselves out trying to stop a war in 2002, 2003. I paid a heavy price. My family paid a heavy price for the retribution of an ungrateful government. And I don't imagine my government's going to be any more grateful for this, this endeavor. But I take my lead from Daniel Ellsberg, who was marching up to courthouse steps, going to a trial that could have put him in jail for the rest of his life. And they said, there it is. They said, aren't you afraid about going to prison? Wouldn't you go to prison to help end this war? There it is, guys. This is why you do what you do, because Daniel Ellsberg set the standard. It's a gold standard. And it's you have to do what you have to do. You have to pay the price you have to, that has to be paid to put yourself in a position to end injustice, to end unjust wars, to end Vietnam War, to end Russophobia, to end the arms race, to stop a nuclear war.
Thank you, Daniel Ellsberg. Ask the Inspector is dedicated to you.
Yes, it is.
Let's go to the questions from our beloved audience. First from Peter Oles in Berlin. Why is the world so silent about the most disgusting massacre in the world's history made by Ukrainians against Poles? Does the world know about massacres in Volnia and Eastern Galicia in 1943 through 45?
The world should know about it, but they don't. Look, I'm going to be dead honest. As much as I claim to be a historian and I follow this stuff, when this Ukraine-Russian conflict started, I didn't have a clue. I vaguely knew who Bandera was because of the CIA aspect of it, but I didn't know about Volnia. I had to study it. I watched the Poles made a movie, an awful movie. I mean, when I say awful, it was actually well done, but horrible movie about the massacres and just how arbitrary and bloody and deadly they were, and the slaughter of women and children, old men, by Ukrainian nationalists just because they were Poles. And I think it was 110,000 people were killed from 43 to 44. Or also what happened to the Russians, 200,000 Russian civilians were slaughtered by the Banderists. Tens of thousands of Jews were slaughtered by the Banderists. But one of the things that stopped people from pursuing this is the fact that Zelensky and the Banderist regime in power in Ukraine today have been lionized in the West. We're not allowed to ask these questions. Nobody's interested in learning the truth. All we want to be told is these are the defenders of democracy standing up to the evil Russian threat. And that's all we're allowed to talk about. We're not allowed to raise our hand and say, hey, that patch on his arm, isn't that the same patch used by the Dilbergers guys who were banging in heads? Crazy stuff.
Okay. Andre from Chicago, according to a U.S. military insider and exopolitics.org, a space ark is buried in Ukraine's Oleski sand desert near the city of Kherson. Do you know anything about it, Scott?
No, but I'm encouraging the First Guards Tank Army to immediately advance on the Oleski sand desert, take control of it so we can excavate the space ark. I don't know anything about it, and I don't know who the U.S. military insider is and all that, but... hey, if it's there, let's find it. That'd be cool.
It sounds like you think Andre might be wearing a tinfoil hat. Am I reading into it too much?
Andre. I'm saying that maybe the U.S. military insider and whoever wrote the exopolitics.org articles might be wearing a tinfoil hat.
Oh, okay. That's much different. Andre is just asking about it.
He's just asking the question.
To confirm his suspicion that they are wearing a tinfoil hat. Got it. All right, let's move on to the next question from our friend Carl Dahl in Greece. In February, Lavrov went to Sudan to assist with economic aid and develop a naval base. Did this spur the U.S. to go into a stoking mood lately? Rival factions trying to work out peace agreements since 2019 are suddenly in war mode again.
I will say this. If there's trouble anywhere in the world, the CIA is involved.
Next is that question. The entirety of your answer, or is that just a pause?
That's the entirety. The CIA is behind this. There's no doubt about it.
Okay. There you go. Less is more.
I just don't want to get whipped.
Well, you had 2 minutes and 52 seconds to spare on that one, but we might give you an extra time on one of the questions.
Thank you.
In exchange for that. Robert from Nottingham. Last Thursday, the 20th of April, the Daily Telegraph headline, I think many others too, was Russian spy ships threatened to sabotage UK energy supply, saying Scandinavian broadcasters identified a possible spy ship. This story was also all over mainstream media. Right, it was. My guess is that it's just more anti-Russian psyops. What do you think, Scott?
Let's not pretend that the Russians don't have spy ships. They do. Let's not pretend that the Russians don't do surveys of energy infrastructure. They do. Let's understand that we are in a very sensitive time where a $12 billion piece of critical infrastructure that was 51% owned by a Russian shareholder was destroyed by the United States in a blatant violation of international law and literally an act of war against a German ally. What is Russia up to? I don't know. Call the intelligence service, SVR. Ask him. I will tell you that intelligence collection takes place on a regular basis by everybody out there. And if you're going to get paranoid about that, then stop being hypocritical. So Daily Telegraph or The Times or whoever wrote that piece should be talking about British efforts. What have British people been doing? What was the role of Britain in knocking out the Nord Stream? What was Liz Truss's text message about? These are questions you should be asking about real attacks, not hypothetical or theoretical attacks. So, I'd say it's more of a psyop than something real. But I'm not going to pretend that these ships couldn't be spy ships. They probably are. Especially the one that had an armed guy on it.
Savina in Bulgaria, have you read Antony Blinken's 1987 book, Ally versus Ally? Savina needs a thought on that. She needs it. Don't let her down, Scott. What's your thought?
Well, Antony Blinken was an idiot in 1987, so I wouldn't read his book then. He's an idiot today, and I probably won't read his book now. If I were to read his book now, it would just be trying to get some insight into what this idiot's thinking. I mean, this is truly one of the worst Secretary of States we've ever had. Totally unqualified for the job. A man who got it simply because he kissed up to Hillary Clinton. Pure and simple. He's not qualified for this job. He wasn't qualified to be National Security Advisor prior to that. And yet here he is directing the foreign policy of the United States. As Sun Tzu said, know your enemy. And maybe if you want to get to know who Antony Blinken again is, what kind of enemy he is, because he's an enemy of the American people. He's not here serving the American people. He's serving the interests of some, cabal of neoliberals who are, using the United States as a vehicle to, imprint their vision of the world on a world that doesn't want to be imprinted by the American vision. So maybe read the book to find out. But if I had a lot of time and not much that I wanted to do, wanted to really be dumbed down, if I were going to go on vacation, I wouldn't buy that book. But maybe some other people will. I'll look into it. I apologize. It was a serious question. And you deserve a serious answer. I'm being a little too derisive here. I promise you this. I'm not going to buy the book, but I will read up on the book. I'll find out what it's about, and I'll get back to you.
All right. I don't think it's particularly derisive to explain why you're not interested in reading that book. How about another question that mentions Blinken? Would you mind, Scott? Would that be okay?
Ouch.
Stellar Crete from Yucaipa, California. Trump said recently that General Flynn just needs to stay alive to replace Blinken. What's your thoughts on Flynn?
Well, I'm going to answer this question because Stellar Crete deserves an answer. But Jeff, we're going to lose some subscriptions on this because there's a bunch of people that subscribe who are hardcore Trump fanatics. And I would just assume that they love General Flynn. General Flynn's a freaking idiot. He shouldn't have been made a general. He operated well above his pay grade. He wasn't a good intelligence officer. And he's not very smart. He's not very analytical. And he violated what I believe to be the code of conduct that should exist for general officers. You don't get involved in politics, dude. And yet he jumped in, got up, gave a stupid speech at the Republican convention, kissed up to Donald Trump, and positioned himself to be a national security advisor. And to show you how stupid this man is, the day one, he comes in and he reads some god-awful speech to Iran, threatening them, about what's he going to do to Iran. A true national security advisor would never do that. A, you're the National Security Advisor. That means you're the head of something called the National Security Council. And so before you made a stupid statement like that, you might want to convene your council and talk about it. Come up with the interagency process where you get State Department to weigh in, Defense Department to weigh in, all these people come in, because you're supposed to be a guide to the formulation of policy and then an assistant in the implementation of policy. You're not a principal dude. The principal is the Secretary of State. The principal is the Secretary of Defense. Those are principals. They go before Congress. They go before the Senate. And they get confirmed. You sort of sneak in because you're an advisor to the president. Mike Flynn forgot about this, forgot who he was, forgot what he's supposed to do. And then he got caught up. I'm not going to, you know, the thing about Flynn is there's a lot of sympathy here. I think he's an idiot. I think he should never have been a national security advisor. I think he was punching well above his weight. That being said, he got screwed. He got set up by the FBI and then he got abandoned. I mean, if I were Flynn, I'd turn to Trump and say, hey, yes, sort of abandoned me, left me out hanging last time. Why would I ever want to work for you again? But see, Mike Flynn is a kiss ass. And Mike Flynn is somebody who has attached himself firmly to Donald Trump's large derriere. And he's going to take that ride as far as it can take him. But Mike Flynn should not be anywhere near the national security establishment of the United States. He's a moron. He's an idiot. He should never gotten 2 stars. He should have retired. Go play golf and shut up and stay out of our lives. But no, here Donald Trump is again proving why he can't be president, proving it once again, because he surrounds himself with idiots. He surrounds himself with the worst possible people in the world. With me again, Jeff, because I'm going to say it one more time. Donald Trump can't be president because he surrounds himself with idiots. There we go. I deserve that pain.
Your masochistic side is coming out finally. I knew it. The funniest thing is that you said we would worry about losing subscribers. Oh, please, never. Do you see these people?
We don't have any.
That's not it. It's like these people in the Substack comments who are saying, "Oh, you know, you want Alex Jones? That's going to kill your credibility now." You know, please. You're associating with Alex Jones because you were with him for the duration of the interview, the entire duration of the interview.
Yeah, for an hour.
I was what else?
Well, the point I tried to make to people, do we have time or am I going to get whipped?
No, the clock's not running now.
Thank you. You know, they're like, why would you ever go on Alex Jones? And I'm like, well, let me ask you the question. How many votes does Alex Jones cast on election day? 1. How many votes do Alex Jones followers cast on election day? Millions. And if I'm trying to sway people over to do something where that kind of electoral weight matters, you're damn right I'm going on Alex Jones' show. I went on it once before. They got me banned. I went on it today or yesterday, and it was a good appearance. Both were good appearances. I thought they were great. Alex Jones, whatever you want to think about the guy, for me, my limited experience with him, he was a great interviewer. He gave me a time to speak. He asked good questions. He was on target. He was focused. Man, I wish every interviewer was like Alex Jones. And I'll tell you this, I'm not asking to go back on, but if he called up and said, I want you back on, I'd go in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Some things in life, many things in life are debatable, but it's beyond me why anybody can't see how if your goal is to influence public opinion, then every step you take should be designed to reach as many people as possible. When you're influencing public opinion, that doesn't mean just the pure people, just the ones who get the approval of these prigs who stick their nose in and worry about nonsense. You want to influence the worst people in the world. Why wouldn't you want to reach the worst people in the world?
If Stephen Colbert called up and said, Scott, I'd like you on my show.
I would draw the line there. Never mind what I just... No, I'm just kidding.
If Bill Maher called up and said, Scott, I want you on my show. I don't agree with them, but I'd go on their show because they are influencers. They have audiences.
You would associate with them is what you're saying.
Ooh. Man, that's a tough word, Jeff, but yes, you're damn right, I would. I'm not afraid of associating.
All right. Wagingpeace.fund. Let me just make sure everybody understands what that is that Kevin is flashing on the screen. Thank you, Kevin Michalitzi, backstage today. Scott is making a film about mostly his trip to Russia and the goals surrounding that, which are to call for a new nuclear disarmament treaty and to combat Russophobia. And we are asking for your financial support, and you can do that by going directly to wagingpeace.fund, Waging Peace being the working title of the film.
May I?
Please.
Thank you, Jay. I didn't want to cut you off. I'm trying to be polite. I'm learning.
You're very courteous.
Thank you. You've trained me well with that whip. But so let me say why, again, I mean, A, if you're going to donate, thank you very much. B, if you're going to donate, do it now. Let me tell you why. I leave on Saturday, and then I'm out of pocket. When I come back, we are hitting the road, hitting the road running. Is that right? Hitting the floor running, hitting the something running.
We're hitting the pavement?
Hitting the pavement running. Thank you, Jeff. I should have cleared my comments with you first.
I don't know.
But we're going to hit the pavement running. And one of the things that's going to have to happen is we're going to have to put together some sort of trailer. And Jeff doesn't know this yet, but I am going to hit him up with an idea before I leave that if we can get the money, by the time I come back, we could have a cute little something that we can play as we go around to continue fundraising for the movie. Movies are very expensive. In Shifting Sand, 2001, $400,000, very cheap movie. This movie, we hope to have high production value, value. I guess I repeated myself there. This is why we need an editor. Cut that out.
But you're going to hit me up with this idea privately. Is that what you're saying? You're not right now?
I'm not going to do it right now.
Well, I can do it right now. Because I think I know what you're talking about. It doesn't sound like the most private, sensitive thing in the world.
We've got a movie called Ways of Peace.
Does it begin with a T?
It's a trailer.
How do I know that?
You knew it, but you don't.
Why are you acting like that's such a sensitive, private thing?
Well, no, because I didn't want to. Because sometimes I throw things out there, and you're like, Scott, you never did that. I'm making it up. I have a fantasy life. But in my dreams, I pretend that I hit Jeff up with stuff in public, and Jeff says, you should have hit me that in private. But we need a trailer. And when we last talked, we had a little conference yesterday of really good, high-quality people who know a lot about the film industry, and they all agree the trailer's thing to do. But when we left that, the idea was that we were going to wait till I come back to use some product from the trip to make the trailer. I came up with an idea that we can make a trailer that doesn't require any of that product. So it's a trailer.
I can't believe you're discussing this publicly.
I apologize. Okay. We'll go to next question.
Well, before we do, look what I just found. This is the Russian version of your book.
It is the Russian version of my book.
Did they change the title? Well, I guess I can. Scott Ritter. That's what Scott Ritter is in Russia. And it looks like it looks like they shortened the title. I can't believe they didn't go for the Russian translation of Disarmament and Perestroika, rolls right off the tongue. What did they change it to? What does that mean in English? Or they're not even telling you?
A disarmament crisis or something of that nature.
Okay.
Actually, apparently, every Russian who looks at the title says, that's a good title. That's a great title.
Okay.
Implying, without saying it, that your English title sucked, which they believe it does because it uses the term perestroika. I picked that title because it reminded me of Love in the Time of Cholera, which won a Nobel Prize, by the way. And, I figured Disarmament in the Time of Perestroika, Love in the Time of Cholera. I mean, come on. Don't you guys get it? Aren't you educated, literate people? But no, the Russians came up with a better title for the Russian book.
All right. Well, speaking of which, should we invite people to go to Scott Ritter Merch to buy your autographed book? Or do you have
Let me make a statement here.
What's the last day that you're going to be able to mail?
I'm going to mail. I ran out of books and I can't get new books because Clarity Press, for whatever reason, doesn't print enough books whenever they go into their reprints. And I guess they have no confidence in our ability to sell books. So I've put an order in for books. That order won't be filled for 2 weeks. 2 weeks, I won't be here. So people, please buy the book. If you want it, buy it. I'm not scamming you. And when I come home, there should be 100 books. And hopefully we have less than 100 orders. Or if we have more, you have to wait till I get more books. But I will autograph them. I will do whatever you want. If you ask me to do a handstand and write the autograph with my teeth, I will do that. And then I will lovingly package the book. I will put it in an envelope like this. I will put the book in it. I will hand carry it to the post office, and it will be mailed with loving attention. Tomorrow, I'm going to mail out every book that I have here that I that I've packaged so far. Unfortunately, there's going to be some that didn't make it because I ran out of books.
All right. So, and one last thing. Will you commit to the audience right now that you will communicate to me which ones you shipped and on what date so that I can answer?
You sent me a link that has, what I understand is all I need to do is click on something.
Correct.
So I'm going to click on everything that was sent, and the unclicked boxes are the unfulfilled orders.
All right. And those of you who are emailing me asking, I will then be able to answer your question. Sorry to keep you waiting.
But you blame Jeff because he tried to introduce a technologically advanced procedure to a Marine who barely knows how to spell his own name. So,
all right. So that may be the world's worst sales pitch to order a book. Order a book. You may not get it, but order it.
I'm being honest. Jeff, what do you want me to do? Lie to people?
No. I know. It's a joke. Buy a joke.
It'll be mailed tomorrow. No.
All right, let's get back to questions. From Toronto. What if more than half of the world's leaders are together and conspiring against mass?
Massachusetts? I'm all for conspiring against Massachusetts, but I'm pretty sure that's different. Against mass.
Conspiring against liquids, maybe, instead of mass. I don't know.
Is this the Catholic mass?
That could be too, right? I've never heard that particular phrase before. So,
well, I mean,
I think it means the mass, conspiring against the masses.
Normally, conspiracies are minority driven. So if you're more than half the world's leaders, you're the majority. So you're not conspiring, you're coordinating. But I don't know. I can't answer the question because I don't understand the question.
Well, what if we can't trust more than half the world's leaders in general?
I'll
simplify it.
If you're in a democracy, elect better leaders.
Well, do you think that might be the case, that we can't trust more than half the world's leaders? Maybe that's the question.
I definitely think that's the case. I think that the way the system is rigged in the world today, we have a political and an economic elite that have hijacked the systems of government. Not only the ruling aspect of it, but the selective aspect of it, how you get to be in government. And now that they're there, they aren't about to give up the reins to lesser beings.
Okay, let's move on to our next question, which is from Rick in West Virginia. Looks like the plan was for BlackRock to buy what is left of Ukraine and let Exxon and whoever else steal the resources for American corporations. But I guess that was based on Ukraine winning the war. Would Russia allow that? Wouldn't that just extend the war?
Let me put it this way. The Ukrainian government is not going to exist when this war is done. And the Russian government will have the ability to, they don't have to assume any of the debts. They don't have to assume any of the contracts. They can literally say you signed the contract with an illegitimate government that no longer exists, and it's null and void. We're doing what? I can guarantee you that BlackRock won't own a damn thing in Ukraine that's under the control of the Russians when this is all said and done. Russia's not playing that game. Russia would never sell its soil to outside people like that. Not Putin's Russia. Maybe Yeltsin Russia would have. Putin's Russia won't. And Maverick will not let it happen. Maverick is standing tall saying no. Right, Maverick? Your security. You're supposed to take care of me.
Does Maverick sense that he's going to be without Papa for a month? Do you think?
I was packing the bag and he's all hanging around going, why are you doing that, boss?
Looking at you with the sad face.
Yeah, it's breaking my heart. I don't want to look at him too much because I might not go, but I'm going. But I'll miss him. My wife's like, I look at you with puppy dog eyes too. And I'm like, yeah, we married 31 years, you know, so you know, I'm used to leaving you for months at a time. But poor Maverick. Oh, my God.
That's an interesting distinction. Thank you, Linda McGregor, for the donation. We appreciate that. Sergey from Vladivostok. When the balloon in the form of Bakhmut bursts and Ukraine's defense begins to crumble, won't this provoke some NATO countries to enter the conflict? Because the beginning of the special military operation was soft, and this will be fast and hard.
Good question, Sergey, but I don't believe NATO as an institution is going to enter this conflict because they understand what the consequences of that are. Also understand that NATO is a consensus-driven organization, and I think it would be very hard to get a consensus for NATO to carry out Article 4 offensive operations in Ukraine. Virtually impossible for that to happen. The bigger risk is Ukraine and Poland entering some sort of union. There's a lot of talk about this, about how the border between West Ukraine and Poland is going to magically disappear. They're going to become some sort of political and economic union. There's even talk about the Baltic states joining in on this union to make some sort of grand confederation that provides security guarantees for Ukraine, which would, in effect, put the Baltics and Poland at war with Russia. Now, I don't know how the Baltics and Poland think they're going to pull this off, or even if they have the guts to pull it off, but this is the direction that, could be heading. I would hope that NATO would inform the Poles that there will be no Article 5 protections extended to you when you do this, just like when the Turks invaded Syria and got tangled up with the Russians. Turkey doesn't get to go, oh my God, an attack against me is an attack against all. NATO went, nah, you sort of did that one on your own. You're by yourself. And that's what would happen with Poland. But, you know, Poland has been infected with the Ukraine syndrome. The Ukraine syndrome is what happens when a very, you know, insignificant country. I mean, there's some significance to Ukraine. I don't mean to be too mean to it, but it's corrupt. It doesn't do much. And suddenly we've turned them into the greatest nation on the planet. Zelensky became not just the modern day manifestation of Winston Churchill, but he is the greatest politician that ever lived. I mean, come on, Nancy Pelosi said so. His speech to the U.S. Congress was the greatest speech ever given in the history of the U.S. Congress, according to Nancy Pelosi. So Zelensky thinks that the world revolves around him. And now that the world's collapsing in on him, the Poles are taking over. They've taken that baton. And the Poles are sitting there going, the world revolves around us. We're going to rewrite all global history so that everybody thinks that Poland is the center of the universe and all Europe should do what Poland wants because Poland has deemed it so. No, Poland, you will be abandoned just like the Ukrainians because you are as insignificant as the Ukrainians. You're a middle-sized, pathetic little country that's batting or punching way above your weight. Yeah, hit the ground running. You're right, Knightley. Look, Marine, English, brain, sometimes it doesn't work.
That's the guy with the Bob Dylan.
I know. That's why I answered him, because I bow to Bob Dylan.
All right, let's do one more question from the ones that have been submitted in advance and then take some live questions. Lux de Calor from Zaragoza. Why exactly did Germany shut down all its nuclear power plants? I apologize for the inappropriate apostrophe in its. There should be no apostrophe there.
That's why I can't answer the question, Jeff, because I don't understand. Are you saying it's or it is? I mean, is this possessive or is this plural? Jeff, you confuse me. No, I apologize. I'm having too much fun right now. I apologize. I'll get serious. Well, because Germany is, you know, they've bought into the green concept, and they've ironically, I mean, some of the, if you do nuclear power right, it's, you know, has the potential to be some of the cleanest energy out there. But, you know, Chernobyl showed how you can do it wrong. 3 Mile Island showed how you could do it wrong. There's many examples of nuclear power being done wrong. And then no matter how you do it, there's going to be nuclear waste that has to be disposed of. And that's a problem. But in terms of generating a lot of electricity and minimizing the carbon footprint, it's sort of a big deal, but the Germans have decided no nukes. They don't want them. They're going to close them down. This is a plan that's been a long time in the making. And they're doing it despite the fact that, I mean, here's the stupidity of Germany. I guess I have to say it. I have to call you stupid, Germany. You care about your greenhouse emissions. Yay. So you're going to close down the nuclear power plants that have minimal greenhouse emissions. You built a whole bunch of wind farms. In fact, you built one over a coal pit because you said, we're never using coal-powered things again. Why? We have an infinite supply of cheap Russian gas. Not anymore. So Russian gas is gone. You can't afford the expensive stuff coming from the United States. So you got to, you're opening up your coal plants. You're shutting down three nuclear plants, but you're going to open up your coal plants because the nuclear plants need to be shut down to meet with your carbon footprint, but you're going to triple your carbon footprint by opening up a coal plant. And here's the genius of the Germans. They had to tear down those wind farms and shred them up to get access to the coal they need for their coal plants. Germany's just run by idiots. Never elect the Green Party into a position of power ever again, because A, they're not green. They just proved it. Okay, it's a name only. They're morons. B, they don't believe in peace. The Green Party is the one that's gotten Germany neck deep in the Ukraine conflict, supporting Nazis, by the way, so they don't believe in history. The Green Party should be outlawed. I don't mean that from a legal standpoint, but I just think that every German that wakes up in the morning, the first thought that should go through their head, besides we hate Nazis, is we hate the Green Party, because the Green Party is empowering the Nazis. And they're stupid about being the Green Party. I mean, they're supposed to be about, you know, the ecology. And I mean, where's Greta when you need her? How dare you? You know, that's where we need her now. We need Greta right now to look at the Germans and say, how dare you?
Unfortunately, Greta is on the computer I have that's in the shop. Oh, sorry about that. Let's just stop that. I'm glad you clarified that you didn't mean that literally, outlawing it. You know, for a second there, I thought you sound like AOC. Yeah, or, well, did he say outlaw? I was more thinking of AOC. She said a few days ago that the government should ban Fox News because it's a broadcast outlet, and it's not even a broadcast channel. So she was not only censorial, but ignorant. All right. Lest I go on too long and take time away from our audience, let's get to the questions coming in live from our beloved audience with Kevin Michalitzi curating them. Katarina, thanks for the donation. Could you send a book to the UK? Thanks in advance. While Scott is in Russia, I'm going to work on setting up a way so that we can do it worldwide.
And Scott will order even more books to make sure I don't run out of them.
Right. Rockabilly, thanks a lot for the donation. Are the neocon ideology the continuation of what was in Germany in the 30s and 40s?
Actually not. Gosh, I've been so focused on Russia lately that I've purged my mind of the George W. Bush era neocon studies. But neocons are actually, they come from Trotskyists, actually communists. The original neocons were Trotskyists, and basically they matured into the current right-wing neocon group. But they're actually, their roots come from the other side of the political spectrum of what was going on, of fascism. They come from the Trotskyite wing. We hate the Green Party. Tony Soprano. That doesn't sound like a German name, though. You sound like a guy that's from New Jersey, but that's okay.
We may need to see his birth certificate to confirm his identity.
Now, again, people are going to probably, I probably got this all wrong, Jeff, and now people are going to be sending his hate mail going, Scott, you're wrong. You're wrong about that. I could be wrong because I admitted up front that I'm digging deep into a brain that is insufficient. And because I've been focusing on Russia, you know, trying to calculate casualties and all this kind of garbage.
Once in a while, the weapons inspector is wrong. Once in a while. By the way, I'm not sure I agree with you about whether or not Alex Jones crossed the line into defamation.
What I said is the courts. I read the case. Alex Jones failed to provide material at a certain phase of the court process. And so the judge defaulted judgment against him, bypassing the part of the trial where they determine whether or not defamation took place. So
okay. I thought you were opining that it wasn't really.
No, defamation. I was saying that we never got to ask that. They just jumped over and just said, we're assuming that it's defamation. And they never went through the actual discovery of, was this defamation?
I'm glad we got that clarified. That saved us a 3 month.
Another problem? Because I don't think we can survive one more fallout like that.
All right, Kevin, let's go to the next question. Paul Wolf, the Wolfman. Which NATO weapon systems rely on GPS? Which ones can the Russians jam?
Well, I mean, JDAMS is a satellite guided bomb that can be jammed. My understanding is that HIMARS has a GPS function that can be jammed. My understanding is the Excalibur round that's fired by the 155 millimeter howitzer has a GPS function that can be jammed. And my understanding is the Russians are jamming all of them. And so all these miracle weapons that are supposed to go out there and, you know, level the playing field, they ain't leveling anything anymore. I mean, this is what people need to understand. The war is so one-sided right now. It's tragic. I mean, you know, I don't want to appear to be gleeful, because you can't be gleeful about death, except, you know, the only reason why I'm gleeful is I just think of these Ramstein contact group meetings that they have all the time. You know, they just had another one where the Ukrainians come in and they just ask for the moon. And NATO sits there and pretends to give them everything. And then the media goes, oh, my God, they gave them HIMARS. It's over. The war's over. A miracle weapon. And the Russians are like, we've been reading about that. That's a, yeah, we can jam that. Well, let's whew, HIMARS, boom, collect data, whew, boom, collect data. Whew. You got to figure it out yet? Yeah. Whew. Jam. Goodbye. And that's what's happening. The race of disarmament. Okay. Thank you, Alexander. Because I don't speak Russian.
Tell the author what the name of his book is so he knows.
Yeah. Disarmament Race, Race for Disarmament, something like that. Yeah. There it is. And this is the most timely book of the year.
Yeah, it's coming out at the same time as Joe Biden and Kamala Harris officially announcing that they're running for re-election.
Well, I thought you were going to say it was coming out at the same time that the author was touring Russia.
But that would be obvious.
Okay, yesterday's gone. Yesterday's gone. Okay, it's gone. And listen, full stop. It is gone.
See what I mean? Does that clarify? Does that clarify? BDH, is it possible to get an autograph on a T-shirt?
Jeff has me doing this before I leave, and it will be done. I am submitting an autograph. What Jeff does with that autograph, and I can tell you what he won't do. He won't artificially put that in a book and mail it out as if I had signed it. You, when you get a book from me, it's signed by this hand. But the autograph will be used, I believe, to assist in Merck. Now, if someone can convince Jeff that my autograph on a T-shirt could sell, then the capitalist that is Jeff would say, let's do it, baby. But you're going to have to convince him, because that's going to take
hard stuff. That was running from before. I forgot to stop.
That hurt, man.
Oh, I apologize. All right. So, yeah, that answers your question, Eve, if you're watching. He's been all over me waiting for a response. A signature is coming, says the weapons inspector. Okay. Let's see. Unseen Runner. Are you planning to sell signed copies of the book and mail them in Russia? You mean mail them from Russia? That's a no.
No, we're not. We're not. But let me say what I am going to say here. I'm doing 11 destinations in Russia. I can't say what they are right now because of security reasons. There's a real problem in Russia right now. There's a big fear factor about big crowds getting together, especially around the Victory Day. And so there's a lot of effort being put into reduce profiles, reduce opportunities. And one way you do it is, A, you don't put 1,000 to 5,000 people together at the same place. There was anticipation that there would be crowds of that size coming to some of the venues that I would speak at. I don't know why, but they would do that. That's not going to happen. Right now, they're talking about 50 to 100. Of select people, carefully screened, will go to places that won't be announced in advance for security reasons, because there's a legitimate worry that the Ukrainians might want to try and take out a guy they have placed number one on their list of people to hate. That's me. And I'm not unhappy about this. I mean, I'm not unhappy that they're caring about security. I'm bringing my daughter with me. So I'm bringing my daughter home. That's sort of like mission number one, get my daughter home. I'm grateful they're doing that. But I also recognize that this impacts the purpose, one of the purposes of the book tour. which is to sell books. Now, they will be live streaming my presentations on YouTube. So I guess, you know, there'll be a live audience, and then there will be a, what's the word? Not a live audience, but a...
an internet audience?
Yeah, but there's another word that we use for them, a virtual audience.
Oh, no, yeah. All right.
Is it virtual audience?
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Okay, virtual audience. And Jeff, I just found out about this, so I will try and make sure that you get the link too, so maybe that you could live stream it, or you could capture it and then play clips of it or something. I don't know, okay. But I'll find out how to get the link to you so that that can happen as well. Right. But what I would offer the bookstores in each location that I go to is that I will sign as many books as they want me to sign. I've done this in the United States, where I've gone in and we sell 100 books, but they realize that there's going to be some interest in an autographed book, and so they have me sign, say, 50 more before I leave. And then when I leave, they say, personally autographed by the author, and people come in and buy those. So I plan on doing that. I won't be able, of course, to personalize the autograph to you, but it will be signed with this hand, and we'll, you ever seen that Nicolas Cage movie with Moonstruck?
No, as you know, I only watch PBS documentaries.
You watch.
But tell us about it, as if I know what you're talking about.
Cher's in the movie. She actually, I think Cher won an Oscar, got nominated for an Oscar in the movie, but Nicolas Cage plays a baker who got his hand caught in a machine, and it, so he has an artificial hand. And so a key line in the movie is, this hand. So that's what I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to sign the books with this hand. Sorry, I'm trying. I'm in a good mood, so I'm in a joking mood. So
I can tell. Just make sure you remember you're right-handed.
I said this hand. That's
right. Right-handed. All right.
I know okay. It looks like the left hand because the camera's reversed, but no, it's the right hand. Okay, thanks. Olivia.
Scott, that would be you. Stay safe during your trip to Russia. I have a question as well. What do you think about the fact that Stoltenberg said that Ukraine will join NATO and all the countries in NATO agree?
First part of the Stoltenberg statement is sheer fantasy. Ukraine will never join NATO. That's sort of why Russia's at war with them right now, because it ain't going to happen. And then the second one's just a bold-faced lie. All nations don't agree that Ukraine should join NATO. If all nations agreed that Ukraine should join NATO, Ukraine be a member of NATO now. But there's wide disagreement in that. And I'll tell you who leads the disagreement factor is the United States. So Jan Stoltenberg is just a man of high fantasy quotient, and he's a liar.
Okay. Joe H., what's the possibility NATO pilots will take part in the coming Ukraine offensive if it ever materializes, or NATO tank crews as well?
I mean, define NATO pilot, define NATO tank crew. NATO trained or active serving NATO? I think it's slim to none that active serving NATO military persons will participate, because that's an act of war. I think we already have a case where people who have received training from NATO are fighting on the side of Ukraine as part of the International Legion and other foreign units. Some who can speak Ukrainian are intermixed with Ukrainian units. So we already have a case of NATO-trained people fighting. We'll see what happens if F-16s are ever approved. Right now, it doesn't look like they ever will be. But if F-16s are approved, there will be a need for qualified pilots to fly these things. Ukraine has, of course, claimed that they have trained some pilots, but none of them are qualified to fly the F-16 in combat. You would need somebody who has flown the F-16. And there you might see an arrangement where people with recent F-16 experience, including Americans, might make themselves available on a contracted basis with the Ukrainian government to fly the F-16. I would anticipate that if the political decision is made to use F-16s, that would be because they recognize that they need to dramatically change the course of the war. You're not going to change the course of the war by providing F-16s with Ukrainian pilots. They just die. But if you provide F-16s with Western NATO pilots who have operational experience, know how to fly the plane intimately, you know, it's not going to change the outcome, but you could at least have the F-16 perform to its full potential. But right now, like I said, I think this war is over by the end of summer, early fall, and the F-16 decision is not going to be made prior to that.
All right. Let's do one more question and then call it a show. This is from Morat Dzguev. Thank you for the donation. That, I'm sure, is the correct pronunciation, by the way. Could you bring back from Russia, Kukhod region, back their view on human dignity? Whatever that means, maybe you can figure it out. Could be a working alternative to that woke movement. Have a safe trip. Does that make sense to you at all?
No. But I'll look up what the Kukhod region is. Caucasus region? Could you bring back? Because Dzguev name, the name sounds like he might be from the Northern Caucasus, from Dagestan or Ingushetia or.
Kevin, you're curating this. Does this mean anything to you? Okay, we'll take that as a no. Why don't we do one more question? And if you have one, Kevin.
Yeah, I was just looking that region up, so.
All right. Well, it's okay. No need to look it up. I just thought you might know. Could someone ask Scott about the possible Ukraine invasion of Transnistria? If he says Ukraine is out of ammo soon, that seems like the only solution for Ukraine. Let's see if we can find someone to ask Scott that. Anybody here available to ask Scott? No? Okay. All right. I'll be the one.
Scott. Yeah, look, here's the deal. I don't say Ukraine's out of ammunition soon. I mean, why does everybody blame it on me? Scott said this. Scott very rarely comes up with original pronouncements of that nature because those are fact-driven pronouncements as opposed to analytical pronouncements. The Secretary General of NATO said they're running out of ammunition. The President of Ukraine says they're running out of ammunition. The Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff say they're running out of ammunition. Everybody says they're running out of ammunition. So it's not that Scott's saying it. Scott's simply repeating the message that others have and then emphasizing it. Ukraine's running out of ammunition. The most critical ammunition they're running out of, however, are their high-value systems, the 155-millimeter artillery systems provided by the West, the HIMARS systems, things of that nature. Their Soviet-era systems, they're also running out of ammunition, 152-millimeter shells, 122-millimeter shells, the 122-millimeter artillery rockets. These are all, they're running short of these too. Why is Transnistria important in this regard? The largest ammunition dump in Europe, maybe the world, who knows, is located there. It's a Soviet era ammunition dump, and it's just chock full of old ammunition. We're talking about some old ammunition. There's this fantasy that somehow Ukraine will be able to invade Transnistria and gain access to this and thereby solve their ammunition problems in a harbor. There's a couple fundamental flaws to that. One, Transnistria is defended by people who've been preparing for a long time to defend it from threats like Ukraine. One of the reasons why the Russians are proceeding at such a painfully slow pace in parts of the Donbass is that the Ukrainians have had 8 years to dig in. 8 years. The Russians have had over 30 years to dig in. All right, so one would imagine that the Russians have prepared defenses, that this isn't the first time that they've considered the potential of somebody coming in to try and take this territory away from them. Two, if you think for a second the Russians are going to go, oh gosh, okay, we surrender, come on in, we'll open the door for you, and you can just take the ammunition as you want. One, the guys that are defending it will have it wired, they'll blow it. Two, in case the Ukrainians are able to come in and cut the fuse and all that, the Kinzhal missile is going to hit it. It's going to get blown. None of that ammunition will ever be used by the Ukrainians against the Russians, ever. And Ukrainian generals know this. So therefore, anybody comes and said, hey, boss, let's invade Transnistria so we can get that ammunition. The smart Ukrainian general says, No, let's not, because it isn't going to end up the way you think it's going to end up. It's just going to complicate things. Plus, we'll have to invade Russia, because Russia has said that Transnistria is part of Russia. So now we're invading Russia. Oh, God, God. And then they're going to basically kill Zelensky and destroy the government. Don't hit me again, Jeff. Don't. You son of a bitch.
All right, that's it for the questions. Kevin Michalitzi doing a fabulous job backstage. Thank you so much, Kevin. This has been the penultimate episode of Ask the Inspector.
And correct usage of the word.
That's right. And the very last episode, not ever, but prior to Scott's departure for Russia, will be Friday night. That's the loquacious version at 8 p.m. Eastern time. I hope you join us. And once again, I want to remind people that this is Daniel Ellsberg Week, and there's a website set up for that, danielellsbergweek.org. Our friends at Roots Action are behind this website, and we thank them for these images they put together and the great quotes. And if you want to read Scott's love letter to Elon Musk, there it is. Go to scottritterextra.com.
Illustrations by Sam Poling.
That's right. And if you haven't subscribed to us yet, why not? Do it. scottritterextra.com. Nothing's behind a paywall, but if you want to sign up for a paid subscription out of the generosity of your heart, we appreciate that. And also, you can donate directly to the film that Scott is making about his trip to Russia. That's at wagingpeace.fund. There it is. And unless you have anything else to say, we'll call it a day and say thanks.
Well, since this is the penultimate session, I'll save it for the ultimate session.
Okay. Very good. Take care. See you all Friday night. Thanks a lot, everybody.